Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Lewis Sacker, who reads from and discusses the 10th anniversary edition of his book, Holes, published by Random House. In the weeks to come, we have John Grogan, Sandra Lee, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Well, thank you for coming to the Tattered Cover, and we appreciate your business. We appreciate you supporting your local independent bookseller. All of you are probably familiar with Lewis Sacker's wonderful books, especially Holes, the 10th anniversary. But here are some interesting facts about the author himself. And there's nothing that's going to embarrass him. The inspiration for Wayside School Building may have come from the Empire State Building, where his father worked when Mr. Sacker was a boy. When he was in college, he worked at Hillside Elementary School, and those kids were the basis for the Wayside School books. His wife was a counselor at an elementary school, and she was the inspiration for the counselor in a boy in the girls' bathroom. And finally, before becoming a full-time writer, Mr. Sacker was a lawyer. He looks very legal, doesn't he? Luckily for us, he was able to quit his legal career and write these terrific books, especially his award-winning book, Holes, which is now celebrating its 10th anniversary. Please welcome Lewis Sacker.
Thank you. I'm here because it's the 10th anniversary of Holes, and I've been on this sort of week and a half book tour with it. And wherever I go, people ask me, "Wow, can you believe it's been 10 years?" And my answer is always yes. Because it's when I write a book, it's all-consuming. I start out knowing very little about what the book's going to be about. I just try to find something that intrigues me to get me started. So in the case of Holes, it was Camp Green Lake. I thought this would be a great setting for a book, and I started writing about Camp Green Lake before I had any idea of what the story was going to be or who the characters were even going to be. And I write about an hour a day at first, because I don't know where I'm going with it or even if it's going to go anywhere. A lot of times I'll start a book or I'll start an idea. I wouldn't even call it a book. And it doesn't, I write a couple of paragraphs and it just doesn't seem to lead me anywhere. And so I'll start something else. And then I'll start something else. Until eventually I get something that kind of leads to something else, and that leads to something else. So I'll write about an hour a day and just sort of let it sit and come back to it the next day. And I think that's one of the most important things about writing for me, is just the routine of coming back to it day after day after day. Because my initial starts are so bad that if I just waited for inspiration and then came back to it a couple of days later and came back to it a week later, I would just look at it and just think, oh, this is garbage. But because I just come to it every day after day after day, and I write about an hour, and obviously there's a part of me that is thinking about it, even when I'm not writing. Because sometimes I'll be stuck and not know, and I'll quit at the end of my hour or so, and then I'll come back to the next day, and suddenly ideas start flowing. So there's some part of me that's been working on it. And the first draft of Holes took me about 6 months to write. And in fact, now that I think about it, I didn't even finish it. The first draft, I got maybe to the part where Zero and Stanley had gone off and found Zero, and they were heading towards God's thumb. And I kind of ran out of steam, because when I'm writing it, I go off in lots of different directions, and it just sort of lost its momentum. So then I go back and start a second draft. And the second draft, I have a better idea of where the story's going, and who the characters are going to be now. And so I can write a little longer, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours a day. And that might take me about 4 months to finish the second draft. And then I'll do a third draft, and then a fourth draft, and a fifth draft. And all this time, I never talk about a book. My wife didn't know what I was writing. My daughter didn't know, my editor, my agent. And it just starts to consume me. And it builds and builds, and I have this rule where I don't allow myself to talk about it. So pretty soon it's just feel it like bursting inside me, which I think is a great, great motivation to write it. And that's one of the main reasons I don't talk about it, is it becomes this all-consuming thing that I want to write. And then finally the final draft is written. And in fact, in the final draft, I just have to tell myself, this is what happened. You know, it's no longer, should this happen? Should that happen? Does this work here? You know, maybe I should have this happen instead. I just tell myself, nope, this is what happened. And now it's my job just to tell it. So I'll do the final draft. And then it's like this amazing release when I finally let my wife and daughter read it, and I send it to my editor and my agent. And then it takes about 2 years for the book to be published. And by the time the book comes out, I've pretty much lost connection with that person who was all consumed with it. And immediately, almost immediately after Holes was published, it won the National Book Award for Young People's Literature. And then a few months later, it won the Newbery Award. So I immediately started being interviewed all the time about the book. And pretty much I've been hearing the same questions for 10 years. So, yes, I can believe it's been 10 years. One of the things, though, that I've enjoyed on this book tour, you know, normally if I do a book tour, it's with a new book and I'm excited to present it to the reader, and I'll choose a part that gets the reader kind of hooked on the book so that they'll go out and buy it and want to read it. But in this case, I kind of feel like most of the people I've come across have already read the book or have seen the movie. So what I've been doing is allowing or asking people in the audience to pick a favorite part of the book, or that the part they want me to read. And it's been fun to actually read parts that I hadn't looked at for 10 years. So somebody have any part that they would like read? Anybody want to raise their hand? Interesting part of the book you're on, or yes.
I don't know where it is, but you probably do the part with the nail polish in it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I'll find it. That's actually a part I would read when the book first came out, where people hadn't known the book. But I'll read that again. You know, it was actually fun to, when for the National Book Award, they do that where they have, like, they announce the five finalists. I think it was five. And we all got to New York, like, the, you know, 2 days before the actual event, and go around doing readings and things. And there's this one event where it's open to the public, where they have all the there's like, I think there were five categories for the award. There was fiction, nonfiction, poetry, young adult, maybe four categories. So there were 20 authors there, and they had all 20 of us come, and we read to the people who showed up. It was a free event. And I'm proud to say that the young adult authors definitely wowed the crowd more than any of the serious adult authors and poets and nonfiction. And this was actually the part that I read to that group. They had to step around holes to get to the cabin door. Stanley was surprised to see so many holes around the cabin. He would have expected the warden to not want the campers digging so close to her home. But several holes were right up against the cabin wall. The holes were closer together here as well and were of different sizes and shapes. Mr. Sir knocked on the door. Stanley still held the empty sack. "Yes," the warden said, opening the door. "There's been a little trouble out on the lake," Mr. Sir said. "Caveman will tell you all about it." The warden stared at Mr. Sir a moment, then her gaze turned towards Stanley. He felt nothing but dread now. "Come in, I suppose," said the warden. "You're letting the cold out." It was air-conditioned inside her cabin. The television was going. She picked up the remote and turned it off. She sat down on a canvas chair. She was barefoot and wearing shorts. Her legs were as freckled as her face and arms. "So what is it you have to tell me?" Stanley took a breath to steady himself. "While Mr. Sir was filling the canteens, I snuck into the truck and stole a sack of sunflower seeds." "I see." She turned to Mr. Sir. "That's why you brought him here?" "Yes, but I think he's lying. I think someone else stole the sack, and Caveman is covering up for X-ray or somebody. It was a 20-pound sack, and he claims to have eaten them all by himself." He took the sack from Stanley and handed it to the warden. "I see," the warden said again. "The sack wasn't full," said Stanley, "and I spilled a lot. You can check my hole." "In that room, Caveman, there's a small flowered case. Will you get it for me, please?" She pointed to a door. Stanley looked at the door, then at the warden, then back at the door. He slowly walked toward it. It was a kind of dressing room with a sink and a mirror. Next to the sink, he saw the case, white with pink roses. He brought it back out to the warden, and she set it on the glass coffee table in front of her. She unclasped the latch and opened the case. It was a makeup case. Stanley's mother had one similar to it. He saw several bottles of nail polish, polish remover, a couple of lipstick tubes, and other jars and powders. The warden held up a small jar of dark red nail polish. "You see this, Caveman?" He nodded. "This is my special nail polish. Do you see the dark, rich color? Can't buy that at a store. I have to make it myself." Stanley had no idea why she was showing it to him. He wondered why the warden would even have the need to wear nail polish or makeup. "Do you want to know my secret ingredient?" He raised and lowered one shoulder. The warden opened the bottle. Rattlesnake venom. With a small paintbrush, she began applying it to the nails on her left hand. "It's perfectly harmless when it's dry." She finished her left hand. She waved it in the air for a few seconds, then began painting the nails on her right hand. "It's only toxic while it's wet." She finished her painting her nails and stood up. She reached over and touched Stanley's face with her fingers. She ran her sharp, wet nails very gently down his cheek. He felt his skin tingle. The nail on her pinky just barely touched the wound behind his ear. A sharp sting of pain caused him to jump back. The warden turned to face Mr. Sir, who was sitting on the fireplace hearth. "So you think he stole your sunflower seeds?" "No, he says he stole them, but I think it was..." She stepped toward him and struck him across the face. Mr. Sir stared at her. He had three long red marks slanting across the left side of his face. Stanley didn't know if the redness was caused by her nail polish or his blood. It took a moment for the venom to sink in. Suddenly, Mr. Sir screamed and clutched his face with both hands. He let himself fall over, rolling off the hearth and onto the rug. The warden spoke softly. "I don't especially care about your sunflower seeds." Mr. Sir moaned. "If you must know," said the warden, "I liked it better when you smoked." For a second, Mr. Sir's pain seemed to recede. He took several long, deep breaths. Then his head jerked violently, and he let out a shrill scream, worse than the one before. The warden turned to Stanley. "I suggest you go back to your hole now." Stanley started to go, but Mr. Sir lay in the way. Stanley could see the muscles on his face jump and twitch. His body writhed in agony. Stanley stepped carefully over him. "Excuse me," said the warden. Stanley was too frightened to speak. "He's not going to die," the warden said. "Unfortunately for you."
Thank you.
In this book, in the hardcover edition of this, there are some articles about me. One was written by my daughter at the time for the Newbery, called "Are You Really Lewis Sacker's Daughter?" And then my wife wrote one around that same time too, and then my brother wrote one especially for this book, about growing up with me. One of the things, though, after I was told I won the Newbery, I was on literally was one phone call after another with different writers from various newspapers around the country, and then I had to fly to New York, and I was on the Today Show with Katie Couric the next morning, and the winner of the Caldecott was also on the show. They give the Caldecott, for those who don't know, to the best picture book, and it's based on the illustrations, not the writing. And then the Newbery's for the best novel. And Katie Couric at that time had a couple of young kids, so she was into picture books. And besides, they were able to show the pictures on TV. So she spent about 5 to 10 minutes talking to the Caldecott winner, who I can't, name escapes me, but, and they show each picture and they talk about it. And, you know, one of the questions I kept getting when I was doing these interviews was, you know, "Tell us what your book's about," which I absolutely hate that question, because it's really, Holes is very difficult to describe, but I think any book is. I mean, any book that I spent 2 years writing to now have to try to tell what it's about in a 2-minute interview is really difficult. But I was practicing. Okay, she's going to ask me that. This is my answer going to be, and you know, and then finally she finished with the Caldecott winner and turned to me, and there were no pictures to put up or anything. And then she gave a brief synopsis of what the book was about, you know, the one question I was ready for. And then she said, what inspired you to write this? And, you know, I mean, I wish I got inspiration. You know, mostly I sit at my desk and I try to think of something. And what I said, was, well, we had moved, you know, we had moved from San Francisco to Austin, and it was basically the Texas heat. And she looked at me like, "Did you understand my question?" And you know, but I never talked about that with my brother. But he began. He began his article about me, and I think he ends up answering that question a lot better than I did. Louis Sacker takes long walks with his dog every morning in the canyons below his house. About a decade ago, during the sweltering days of summer, the heat got to be too much, even for walking. Louis sat down at his desk, wiped his forehead, and began writing about the relentless sun beating down on him. He wrote about his hot and dusty clothes. He wrote about his strangling thirst. And pretty soon, Stanley Yelnats was riding the bus to Camp Green Lake.
Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for John Grogan, Sandra Lee, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on October 27th, 2008.